So we have the two parshas before us this evening, Matos and Maaseh. And with that we close for the time being Chumash Bamidbar. And there's a great deal of discussion, actually, on two words that feature in the beginning of the first of the parshas Matos. Perek Lamed, Pasuk Beis. Vayidaber Moshe el Roshi Hamatos Livnei Yisrael Lemor. Moshe speaks to the heads of the tribes of Bnei Yisrael, saying, Zeh Hadavar Ashetziva Hashem. This is the matter, this is the word that Hashem has commanded. And the words that catch the attention of Chazal here, and Rashi quotes them, are Zeh Hadavar. For as we will see, this forms the unique signature of Moshe, which accompanies his Nebuah. Rashi comments, it's from the Sifrei. Moshe Nisnaba, Beko Amar Hashem. What we're more used to, as Nebuah introduced, is with the words Ko Amar Hashem, Yirmiyahu, and Yeshaya, and that's the standard. Moshe also has introduced Nevuas with the words Ko Amar Hashem, for example, when he is telling Paro, foretelling of the plagues in Mitzrayim, Ko Amar Hashem Kachatos Halela, that's how he predicts Makas Becheros. The Hanavim Nisnabu Beko Amar Hashem, and other Nevi'im also, that's standard for them. But then, Mosef Aleha Moshe, Moshe comes into his own, is on a higher level than them. Shenisnabe b'lashon zeh hadavar. He also introduces his nevuahs, or can introduce them with the words zeh hadavar. Well, firstly, we may ask, what is the difference between zeh hadavar and Ko Amar Hashem? They both sound equally good. Zeh hadavar, this is the word, Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem. We may be inclined to say that the difference between them is that Zeh HaDavar introduces word for word, the exact words. Perhaps, Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, it could be a function of the fact that other Nevi'im, they saw more of a vision, which was then translated to a degree into words. What they're giving you is the absolute substance of the prophetic vision. But hard to say Zeh HaDavar. That is actually how some Mefarshim explain. Moshe receives almost a script, word for word. Moshe takes dictation. As a Nevi'im receive a vision and then put it into words. The Nesiv is unhappy with this approach because it's based on the understanding that Ko means approximately. Ko. It's because the letter Kaf has that element of approximation. Kaf Hadimian. Like, when you say approximately. Anyone who's ever called for a taxi and was told that it's coming kechamish dakot knows that that can be something of an approximation. Anything from 5 minutes upwards to 72 hours is all called kechamish dakot. However, we find that may not be correct, because we find that the word ko means exactly like this. For example, Moshe is told in his introductory speech to Bnei Yisrael before Matan Torah, Ko Tamar leBeis Yaakov, Besaged leBnei Yisrael, thus you shall say, and Rashi is at pains to point out that it means exactly this, Lo Pachos veLo Yoser, Eila HaDvarim, it has to be exactly this. So Ko does not mean approximately, or the substance of. Another example, which is actually a halachic example, the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, Duchening, what we call, is also introduced with the words Ko Tavaruch Hu. Now, Ko Tavaruch Hu does not mean something like this. Ko Tavaruch Hu means exactly this. Yivarechecha, Yair, Yisa. It can't be something else. It can't be less. It can't be more. Which means that Ko also has a connotation of precision. And that being the case, we return to our question, if Zeh HaDavar means exactly like this. This is it. And Ko Amar Hashem is exactly thus. So what's the difference? How many types of exactly are there? Why does Moshe get Zehadavar and the other Nevi'im call Marash? And Mefarshim explain that this is actually the function of the unique level of Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Rambam discusses it, and in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, that actually Moshe was the only Navi who was able to receive his Nevuah while he's awake. All other Nevi'im are either in asleep or in something of a trance. And the reason why, as the Ramchal explains in the Sefer Derech Hashem, is because it's the spiritual faculties of the Navi that receive the Nevuah. It's his Neshama that receives his Nevuah. The more awake a person is, the more connected and connected the spiritual faculties are with the physical. And for almost every Navi, that makes it impossible to be available to receive a purely spiritual message called Nevuah. That's why they could only receive Nevuahs when they're asleep, because when a person is asleep, his spiritual faculties loosen themselves to a certain degree and free up. That's why we say, with a habdil, but the Gemara says in Brachos that sleep is a 60th of death, in the sense that it's not a total separation, but it's a part separation. That's why in the morning we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving us our neshama back. Neshama shenosata bi, osid litla mimeni ulachzira bi. It's removed and returned to a certain degree. It's only when the Navi is asleep is his neshama free of its physical investments, able to receive Nevuah. That's why a Navi has to receive Nevuah when he's asleep. Moshe Rabbeinu is unique in this respect. His spiritual faculties are in no way hindered or restricted by their presence in a fully alert and conscious physical state, and thus he's able to receive Nevuah while he's awake. And this brings us to the difference between Zeh HaDavar and Kol Amar Hashem. They both mean precise. But the word Zeh, as we know from many instances, always has the connotation of being in the presence of the thing that you're talking about. Classic example, of course, is from Seder night. Bavur Zeh. That's how we know that the mitzvah is Dafke B'Shashish Matzah Umoro Munachem Lefanecha. You have to be in the presence of those things that you're talking about. Rashi tells us in Parshas Bo, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe about the new moon, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, he showed him what the new moon looks like, Kazer Re'eh V'Kadesh. Which means if you're going to say Zeh HaDavar, you'll talk about Hashem's word with the word Zeh, you must be in the presence of that word. That's impossible for every other Navi, because by definition, when they're receiving it, they can't talk. They can't communicate. And when they wake up and they are communicating, they're no longer in the presence of the word, because that happened while they were asleep. They can tell you exactly what was said to them. The only thing they can't say is, this is the word. I'm in the presence of Hashem's word right now. Only Moshe can say Zeh HaDavar. So that is the explanation of the Mefarshim as to the difference between Moshe's word Zeh HaDavar and the other Nevi'im. There's an interesting shaila, which is raised by one of the great Mefarshi Rashi, that Seidel Aderech, Rabbi Yisachar Ber Eilenberg, one of the great early Aronim. And that is, in a sense, we should note, it's not a question on Rashi, it's a question on Chazal, because Rashi here is purely quoting Chazal. Rashi brought it. The question is, we always adduce the earliest available or relevant proof in the Chumash for what we wish to demonstrate. And here we're saying, Moshe says Zeh HaDavar. No one else can say Zeh HaDavar, only Moshe. Where's the first time we see Moshe saying Zeh HaDavar? Chazal don't talk about it until this week's Parsha. The Bamidbar is almost finished. I mean, we're deep into the Chumash. Moshe's never said the word Zeh HaDavar before? Well, actually he has, on a number of occasions. For example, as soon as we left Mitzrayim, as Bnei Yisrael are commanded how to get the man, to take, how much, not to leave over, Moshe says to them, Zeh HaDavar Ashetziva Hashem, Liktu Mimenu Omer Lekukoles. So you have Zeh HaDavar within a month of them leaving Mitzrayim. Chazal don't say anything. And here's your first example. Moreover, another example in Parsha Shmini, as Moshe details the korbanos for the Yom HaShmini, Yom HaMoshe El Yisrael, Zeh HaDavar Ashetziva Hashem. So you have Zeh HaDavar and Chumash Shemos, Zeh HaDavar and Chumash Vayikra, and nothing from Chazal, no comment, not in the Mechilta on Shemos, not in Teras Kohanim on Vayikra, until you get to the end of Chumash Bamidbar, the Sifrei gets involved, you know, Moshe says the Hadavar. Why did they wait? That is the question of the Tzedel HaDerech, Zukut Shaila, and he leaves it unanswered. Perhaps we may suggest that the reason why the Sifrei did not comment until this point is because the word Davar actually has two meanings. On the one hand, Davar can refer to a matter, a topic, Davar, Dvar Torah, or Davar can mean a word, meaning the word itself. So in a sense, it's either the medium or the message. Now, if we translate the word davar as a word, as a matter, as a topic, then it's not a statement about Moshe's unique level of nevuah, because he's not talking about Hashem's word to him. He's talking about the topic that Hashem spoke to him about. This is the matter. Which means it would say nothing about Moshe's unique level of nevuah. The only time that Zeha Davar would accentuate level of nevuah is if it means not matter, but the word itself. This is Hashem's word, and we are in the presence of it. Only Moshe can say that. And so, perhaps, this is why Chazal never picked up on this, or made mention of it in the earlier Zeha Davars. The reason why is because in each of those, we take the two examples that we mentioned, Moshe's instructions for the man, Moshe's instructions for the korbanos. In each of those situations, there was just one thing that needed to be communicated, which means the word davar is not necessarily about Hashem's word, it's just about the topic, the instruction, the matter. How to collect the man, which korban to bring on Yom HaShmini. However, our case is different. And the reason why is because here we introduce with Zeha Davar an entire range of psukim about Nedarim. All the possibilities, she's married, she's not married, a person takes a shavua, how does he deal with it? The father hears, he didn't hear, the husband heard, he kept quiet, he said something. It's a lot of different situations. There's a great deal here. Difficult to say that all of this is called a davar, a word. It's not one matter. It's not one thing. And corroboration of that is the concluding psukim, concluding pasuk of this section, which is in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin of Perek Lamed Aleph. Reads, Eile hachukim asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. These are the chukim. That means that everything that we've said in these last 16 psukim is summed up in the plural. These are the chukim, not Zeha Davar. That's confirming that there's a great many things going on here, or several things going on here. Asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. How can you conclude by in the plural, Eile hachukim, these are the laws, and still introduce with Zeha Davar? Is it one thing or is it many things? Here, says the Sifrei, there's room to note. In reality, there's many things. So why does Moshe say Zeha Davar? Because he's not talking about one thing. He's talking about Hashem's word to him. Here it comes out. And that's why Chazal waited until it came out in its most accentuated form, that it's about Moshe's level of nevuah with Dvar Hashem. And in fact, perhaps we may suggest more. We've noted Moshe's different than the other Nevi'im. They're all Ko'amar Hashem. Not that we feel bad for them, but they're all Ko'amar Hashem. Moshe is Zeha Davar. But Moshe also uses Ko'amar Hashem. As Rashi gave an example, Ko'amar Hashem, Kachatzos HaLaila. So let's ask a Balabatish a question. If Moshe is so unique and he has his own introduction for Nevuah, so why would he ever say Ko'amar Hashem? It should be Zeha Davar. And we found in a number of instances that he says, Ko'amar Hashem. Why does he ever use the quote-unquote normal or general introduction for his nevuah? That's a good shaila. The Maharal raises this question in the Gur Aryeh. And the Maharal says a very major response. It really depends what the Nevuah is about. And that's an interesting Shaila. I mean, what do Nevuim talk about? Well, open the Nevuim, you'll see. They talk about what Hashem wants for the Jewish people, what Hashem will do for the Jewish people. Nevuah, prophesying the future, talking about the present. That's what all Nevuim talk about. Each one, of course, in their own way, and it's very important. They have to say what they need to say. Moshe also has Nevuahs of that sort. He predicts things, and he warns in the name of Hashem. He'll warn Paro. He predicts plagues for Paro. Much like any other Navi would predict a disaster for Nebuchadnezzar or for Sancherib. But of course, Moshe has another realm entirely, and that's communicating 613 mitzvahs. No one else can do that. That's a special branch of the Nevuah of Moshe. That's very interesting. And on the one hand, Moshe has something in common with the other Nevi'im in terms of the subject matter of his Nevuah, but on the other hand, he comes into his own when it comes to Tariq mitzvahs. No one before him or after him will ever communicate a mitzvah of Tariq. Says Maral, Zeh HaDavar is unique to Tariq mitzvahs. It's a special introduction for the special branch of Moshe's Nevuah. As opposed to Koamar Hashem, if Moshe is saying the type of thing that another Navi would say, then he'll introduce it in the way another Navi would say it. And that's why if he's talking to Paro and predicting Makas Bechoros is not one of the 613 mitzvahs. It generated a couple, but the Makkah itself is a prediction. And therefore Moshe introduces, like other Navi, Koamar Hashem. That's Maharal. Classic. Zeh HaDavar is reserved for Tariq mitzvahs. So I had a shayla on the Maharal. Zeh HaDavar is reserved for Tariq mitzvahs. Did we not just quote the pasuk in Beshalach when Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael how to collect the man? Zeh HaDavar Shetzivah Hashem. Collect an omer every day. Collecting an omer of man every day is not one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's a mitzvah l'sha'ah. It's not an ongoing mitzvah. And this is seemingly a major question on the Maharal. He says that Zeh HaDavar is reserved for 613 mitzvahs. But we find it used with reference to the man. So this is a question that I had many years ago. In fact, I called up Rabbi Yeshua Hartman, if you know who that is. He's the one that has published all this form of the Maharal. He told me it was a good question. He didn't have an answer, which was half good news. But I believe, based on our discussion so far, perhaps we may say that Zeh HaDavar and the man is not a problem for the Maharal. For the very reason that Chazal never commented on it and say, you see, this is the uniqueness of Moshe. He will say Zeh HaDavar. Because when you're talking about one thing, Zeh HaDavar doesn't have to be about the way Hashem is speaking to you. It can simply be about the thing that he spoke to you about, the one message. And therefore, because the man is one thing, Zeh HaDavar, we use the word Davar not as the unique level of Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather because there's only one thing which is being discussed, namely how to collect the man, and that is not a problem for the approach of the Maharal. So as we see, there is a great deal of discussion, and this is really just a segment of a major discussion of all of the Mefarshim, which is generated by these two words, Zeh HaDavar, so late in the Chumash, and Chazal chose the time to comment. That's the time where it comes out fully, in the beginning of Parshas Matos. Well, after the Parsha of Nedarim, Bnei Yisrael are told to go to war. In Perek Lamed Aleph, Psukim Aleph Tehe. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, Nekom Niknas Bnei Yisrael, exact vengeance on the part of Bnei Yisrael. Me'eis Hamidyanim, they are the ones that incited them with their daughters, and they were involved in the plot. Moab, interestingly, are left alone here. We've spoken about that on another occasion. Achar tiyaz velamecha, or more correctly, achar, comma, tipcha, pause, tiyaz velamecha. After that war, so that's when you will be gathered into your people. That's when you'll pass on. Pasuk gimel, vayidaber Moshe el ha'am lemor, hechatzume itchem. He says, energize, activate people. Anashim latzava, for the army, mobilize. V'yu ha-midyan laseis nikmas Hashem ba-midyan. And let them wage war against Midyan to exact vengeance of Hashem. And Rashi comments here. Vayidaber Moshe, af al pi sheshama shemisasa tuluya badavar. It was a very difficult time for Moshe. He's just been told that as soon as this happens, then that's when he leaves the world. So how quickly or how actively should he be seeking to initiate this war? If he delays, he can live longer. Even though he heard Misosa Teluya Badovar, Asa Basimcha Velo Icher. He proceeded with joy, he proceeded with alacrity, he didn't delay. What needs to be done, needs to be done. That's Rashi's comment, again from Chazal, with regards to Moshe. Rashi says, Asa Basimcha. He did it joyfully. He moved quickly. How do we know? Again, say the Laderech asked the question. All we know is that Hashem told him to do it, and he did it. We don't know how much time elapsed between Hashem talking to him and him talking to Bnei Yisrael. Nothing happened in between. It could have taken a while. How do we know that Moshe moved with vigor here? And the Tzedek Laderech gives two very interesting answers. Firstly, Moshe uses the word heichaltsu, and chalutz has a connotation of moving actively, moving with energy. And therefore, the fact that Moshe is looking to energize the people, heichaltsu me'itchem, he moved to happen quickly. That's the shevch of Moshe. That's number one, the choice of the word heichaltsu. And secondly, it says Tzedek LaDerech, very interestingly, Moshe actually changes something that from what Hashem told him. Hashem said to him, Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'is ha-midyonim. Exact the vengeance on behalf of b'nei Yisrael. They were wronged, avenge them. Moshe says, Heichatzu me'itchem v'yu ha-midyon laseis nikmas Hashem b'midyon. Exact vengeance on Hashem's behalf from Midyan. That's a change. Why would he change? Said Tzedek LaDerech, perhaps it's because if Bnei Yisrael had the war presented to them the way Hashem told it to Moshe, it's about your covet, it's about your concerns, it's about vengeance on your behalf, well then in a sense they have the right, perhaps in their estimation, to decide when it should happen. They could say, we're mochel. It's for our benefit, it's about us, and we appreciate that, but we want to hold on to Moshe, so im mishum ha, if it's for us, we're prepared to wait. Moshe didn't give them that exit. Moshe didn't give them that ability to respond that way. He presented it as nikmas Hashem b'midyan. This nikmas Hashem, you can't delay when it comes to nikmas Hashem. By presenting it that way, he didn't give them the option of delaying or tarrying and dragging their feet in any way, because he wanted it to happen quickly. What needs to be done as soon as possible. So that's the Tzedek LaDerech explanation of Rashi regarding Moshe. And then we do have a kind of a corresponding comment with regards to the Jewish people. How do they feel about this? They're going to war. They know that when it's finished, very soon afterwards, that's when Moshe will be leaving them. Were they active? Moshe was, of course. That was an act of self-sacrifice on his part. What about the Jewish people? Pasuk Hey says, Vayumasru me'alfei Yisrael. And they were handed over from Yisrael. Now, Vayumasru is it's a passive. And they were handed over, as opposed to just a straight active. Or says Rashi, Lo dia shvachon shel ro'e Yisrael. You see here how praiseworthy are the shepherds of Yisrael. Kamehim chavivim al Yisrael. How beloved they are to Yisrael. How so? Let's hear these words carefully. Ad shelo shamu b'misaso. Before they heard that Moshe was going to die, so what does it say? Mahu omer, od ma'atu skaluni. Those are Moshe's words. Any more, they'll kill me. They'll stone me. That's what Moshe said back in Baloscha. But things changed. But when the time came, and now they heard that Moshe's going to pass away after this war, Lerotzu laleches. They didn't want to go. At shenimsru al korchom. The reason why it's mentioned in the passive by yimosru is that whoever wanted to go didn't want to go. Whoever was meant to go didn't want to go. Because they wanted to hold on to Moshe a bit longer until they were forced to go. So Moshe, on the one hand, is moving the proceedings along. They're looking to delay because they wish to hold on to Moshe for as long as they can. The Ksav Sofer asks a couple of very interesting questions. Firstly, Rashi's looking to describe for us how beloved the leaders of Israel are. And he quotes two statements. One of them is positive, the other doesn't sound positive at all. And moreover, it sounds like for most of the time there was contention of sorts between Bnei Yisrael and Moshe. They were unhappy and they were complaining and they were blaming him for things. At the very end, when they hear that this is it, so then things change. So that's not all the description of how beloved the leaders are to Bnei Yisrael. It's mostly a description of them being unappreciated and finally being appreciated. Well, that often happens, that when there's the prospect of losing something or parting with something, then you appreciate it. But Rashi brings in the earlier times also. Od ma'atus galuni, how does that contribute to our picture here? And secondly, Ksav Sofer, it's very instructive for us in terms of reading Rashi carefully. Rashi's words are Lehodia Shivachan Sharoa Yisrael. It teaches you how praiseworthy the shepherds of Israel are. Kamehem Chavivim al Yisrael. How beloved they are in Yisrael. Says Ksav Sofer, how many things do I see here? Rashi talks about how praiseworthy they are and then how beloved they are. But all we see here is how beloved Moshe was, parenthetically, finally. But Shvachan shall Roa Yisrael, where do we see the praise of Roa Yisrael? The Jewish people, if they like their leaders, that's for any number of reasons. All you see really is Chavivusan Roa Yisrael. You see how beloved they are, they didn't want to part with them. Shvachan, that's a positive statement. Chavivusan is a normative statement. Those are not the same thing. And Ksav Sofer explains. When it comes to leaders, people who take care of their people, it's possible for a leader to be devoted to the people, but not necessarily because he has the interests of the people at heart. It's possible that he has the interests of his leadership at heart. After all, every king has a kingdom and his kingship and the monarchy, and they all go together. I mean, what is the monarchy if not it's made up of all of those people? But when he acts with regards to them, even for their benefit, that does not necessarily mean that he likes them. It means he likes being their king and he wants to be a good king. If someone attacks one of his cities, he will dispatch to defend. Does he care about everyone in the city? One would hope so, but you can't see from there. All you can see is that he cares that his kingdom remains intact. And so it is. So Ksav Sofer suggests that Bnei Yisrael, they underappreciated Moshe in the sense that as much as he did things for them, they were never sure, is he taking care of us because he likes us, because he cares for us, or because he likes being in the position of taking care of us, and it's good to be the leader. That's always the possibility within the minds of those that are of the people themselves. Well, they judged him unfavorably in this respect. But when were they appraised of their mistake? Well, there came a time when what was good for Moshe and what was good for the Jewish people parted ways. They were no longer one and the same. Because a successful war for the Jewish people will lead to the demise of Moshe Rabbeinu, not a continued reign for Moshe. And this is now the acid test. Here will come out. And Moshe said to them, move quickly, because this is good for you. It's Nikvas Hashem. This is what you need to do. And he put his own interest to the side. It's the one instance where his interest as a leader and their interest as a people did not coincide. And Moshe did not hesitate. That's Shvachon Shel Roi Yisrael. That's the praise. That's how Roi Yisrael should be. And at that point, almost it was a defining moment, and it was a retroactively defining moment, because that was the time that Bnei Yisrael realized that all along Moshe had their interests at heart. They judged him harshly, and therefore they blamed him for things. Od ma'atu skaluni, that's how it was. But looking back now, they realized Moshe was always looking for their best interests, and that led to a new way of looking at Moshe, which really colored now their entire experiences looking back. For Moshe, they saw Shvachon Shel Moshe, and that led to Chavivuson Shel Roi Yisrael. And then they couldn't bear to go. Last week, they were ready to stone him. But based on what they've just found out about who was looking out for them the whole time, they couldn't bring themselves to go. They had to be forced to go. Balkroch. Very beautiful comment of the Ksav Sofer, an important statement with regards to the Torah's ideals for the shepherds of Israel. A major section, moving onwards in the Parsha of Matos, is that of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, the two tribes. They want to stay on the east side of the Yarden. And let's see exactly how they present their case. So this is the beginning of Perek Lamed Beis, and it will take us till the end of Parshas Matos. Umikne Rav, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Aleph, there was a great deal of cattle. Hayal ibn Reuven, v'libnei Gad atzum mod. And they saw these lands by U.S. Eretz Yazer, Eretz Gilad. There was a whole territory that had now been available to them. V'inei makom makom mikne. And it was very fertile. And therefore, they approached Moshe. V'yavo b'nei Gad ibn Reuven. Interestingly, it begins, the only time I believe that Reuven are mentioned first is in Pasuk Aleph. There's a lot of cattle for Reuven and from Gad. As soon as the parak progresses, it's now Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, Gad moves into the first position here. Vayomu, in terms of negotiating with Moshe. Vayomu al Moshe, ve'el Elazar ha-Kohen, ve'el Nesi ha-Eidah le'mor, ataras ve'divon ve'yazeh ve'nimra ve'cheshbon ve'el alei u'savam u'nevo u'va'on. These are all the cities. Pasuk Dalet Haaretz Asher Hika Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael, the land that Hashem smote before the congregation of Israel, Eretz Miknehi, Velavadecha Mikneh, very fertile, good for cattle, and we have cattle. And then there was a long pause, just to allow things to settle in a little bit, and then they proceed with their request to stay on the east side of the Yarden. Now, the Arachaim HaKadosh draws our attention to Pasuk Dalet. I mean, we've introduced, and they describe the land, Ha'aretz Ashehika Hashem Lifnei Adas Yisrael, the land that Hashem smote before Yisrael, Eretz Miknehi. It's a land good for cattle. V'lavadecha Mikneh. We have cattle. Why do they make a point of referring to these lands as the land that Hashem smote before Bnei Yisrael? Moshe is well acquainted with their recent history. He knows that these are the lands that Hashem smote. That's the only thing he knows. What he tell him what he doesn't know, that you'd like to stay there. So they should have said, these are lands, and they're very fertile, and we'd like to stay here. But an important part, apparently, of their introduction is to characterize or define these lands as Ha'aretz HaShehikra Hashem Lefnei Adas Yisrael, the land that Hashem smote before Bnei Yisrael. Why is that so important? So the Rachaim HaKadosh says that actually there are two primary objections, instant objections, to this plan on the part of Bnei Yisrael. And one of them actually isn't even really voiced that much in the Parsha, but it's amazing that they were able to found the temerity to suggest it. There's a mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. There's no mitzvah in living in Chutz La'aretz. They're right next to Eretz Yisrael. They're meant to go in. And they have this request to stay outside. It's amazing. And this isn't something that amongst themselves they thought maybe we'd like to end up here. They came and asked Moshe about it. I mean, they had to know that Moshe would find this objectionable because the Torah finds it objectionable. I mean, how can you stay outside of Eretz Yisrael? But they approach him about it. They must have some way of explaining their plan. I mean, Moshe's a rabbi. They have to present themselves as good Jews if they have this idea. Secondly, it sounds like, and it remains a question as to whether they actually meant this, but it sounds like they were not interested in being together with the Jewish people in anything connected to the land of Israel, including the wars. Sounds like. And that, on that, Moshe does upbraid them about that. But he doesn't talk to them about the living in Eretz Yisrael. That's a mitzvah, Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe doesn't respond. How is it okay? It says, Arachayim HaKadosh, they are preempting both of these, in their estimation, both of these objections with these words by describing the land as Ha'aretz Asher Hikra Hashem Lefnei Adas Yisrael. This is land that Hashem has conquered before Yisrael. What do they mean by that? So let Na'aneh al Rishon Rishon. With regards to the issue of living in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael has defined borders. However, we know it is possible to expand Eretz Yisrael. It's not something that people speak about that loudly nowadays, but it is halachically possible, and it has been done. Now, generally speaking, it takes place once the land itself has been conquered and settled, then it can expand. David HaMelech did this. He moved into Syria, as the Gemara discusses on a number of occasions. Which means, and a number of Mefarshim say this, but the Arachayim HaKadosh is speaking here, that what the Bnei Yisrael are claiming is that this land can be annexed, can be considered a part of Eretz Yisrael, Hamurchevet, of expanded Eretz Yisrael. Now, should you say, well, doesn't the land proper need to be conquered, and then you can move outwards? Isn't that the Seder? So to this they respond, yes, normally, and the reason why is because first the land itself needs to have its Kedusha activated, so to speak, and then it can spill out to neighboring territories. That is if the Jewish people conquer those nations. But these lands were different. And now we hear their words. Ha'aretz asher hika Hashem lefnei adas Yisrael. These are lands Hashem conquered them, so to speak, personally. They saw their involvement in any military excursion here was minimal, if not negligible. That's how they saw it. And therefore, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu has directly conquered, He has bestowed on these lands which are adjacent to Eretz Yisrael, Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, we feel that it's acceptable to stay here. It happens to be that in this respect, they were correct. Because the halacha states that there are many of the mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz that apply on a din Torah level, also from Eva Hayarding. Shmita, Truma, Maaser, there are exceptions. If you need Eretz Avas Chalav Udvash, Eva Yardin is not Eretz Avas Chalav Udvash. So there's no Bikurim from there. I mean, there are exceptions. But as a matter of category, they attained the status of Eretz Yisrael, of expanded Eretz Yisrael. But they also wanted to use these words, says the Arachayim, to address the second concern. Indeed, as far as he understands, they were not originally planning on being involved in the war together with everyone else. Except why not? How can they be neglectful? Said Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, if we need to go to war, we will. But we don't think that we need to go. Because look at how this land has been conquered so far. Hashem did it. He doesn't need our help. If he wasn't conquering the land, we'll conquer the land. But based on experience so far, he did perfectly okay without us. And therefore we'll just carry on with and settle our land here. That's also part of what they meant. And here, Moshe objects. Moshe upbraids them because he is alerting them to a major error, and that is that even if Hashem, so to speak, is conquering the land, you can call it that. I don't know, fundamentally, ultimately, it's certainly true. That doesn't mean that you don't have to be involved also, because Hashem wants you to conquer the land. And therefore, he's not prepared for them to opt out, those two tribes, of being involved in Kibush Haaretz. Well, to their credit, B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven instantly accept. But what do they say? Let's watch carefully. In Pasuk Yud Zayin, beginning with Tet Zayin, Shuela Vayemru, Gidruson, Nivnele B'kneinu Pavarim Tapeinu, will build territories here, will build houses, etc., and enclosures. We'll go first. We're more than prepared. We'll go first. Until we safely see them settled in their place. But in the meanwhile, we'd like our families to be here, but we're not going to come back. They say in Pasuk Yud Ches, so they seem to have given a stellar response. Moshe says, you need to be involved in the war. They say, we're prepared to be involved, and we'll go first, and we won't come back until it's all sorted out. Perfect response. But Moshe still corrects them, because they've made a counter error. Namely, B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven originally thought, Hashem doesn't need us in the war. He'll go to war, so we don't need to be there. Moshe said, no, you've got to be there. B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven had a certain either-or approach. It's either Hashem doing the war, or we will. If he does, we don't need to be there. If he wants us to do it, apparently that's because he won't be there. In other words, there was no synthesis. There was no notion of Hashem guiding their efforts, blessing their efforts, bringing success to their efforts. And that's why in Pasuk Yud Zayin, they say, Va'anachnu neleitz chushim lefnei b'nei Yisrael. We'll go first. There's no mention of Hashem's name in Pasuk Yud Zayin. If we're going to war, that means Hashem won't be there. So we'll be there. And we'll take care of it. Until we have brought them and we have installed them in their place. Moshe goes over their offer, but he changes certain things. He corrects certain things that were mistakes. For have a look in Pasuk Kaf. It sounds like repetition. It's not repetition. It's education. Vayomar lehem Moshe, im tasuna sadavarze, if you will do this thing. And what is this thing? Im techatzu lifnei Hashem lamilchama. Here's the merger. They have spoken either of Hashem doing it, or we're chalutzim lifnei b'nei Yisrael. Moshe says, not that, and not that. Techatzu lifnei Hashem. And again, reiterates in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, v'avar lachem kol chalutz es hayarden lifnei Hashem ad harisho esoy v'abipanam, until he dispossesses the enemy. That's Moshe's message to them. Again, it took a while, it took some sukkim, B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, hear and accept. Because they say, as they go over for a third time their offer, beginning in Pasuk Kaf Hei, but our Pasuk that we need to see is Pasuk Kaf Zayin, B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven say, Va'avadecha ya'avru kol chalutz tzava lifnei Hashem lamelchama, kasher aduni dover, the way you said it. We will go before Hashem. We've heard, we made a mistake, we understand. We will go forward, lifnei Hashem. So this is a very important statement from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. And it's a lesson, of course, that extends way beyond B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. It's a lesson for all discussions of our involvement, Hashem's involvement, how the two go together. Certainly, the either-or approach needs to be put to the side, because neither of the either's are correct. Let's conclude. We didn't get too far into Masih here, but let us take a look at the opening comment of Rashi in Parshas Masih. Masih, of course, are the journeys. Eile Masih, Pasuk gives us those 42 places. Lama nichtabu hamasos halal. Rashi asks the question, why are these travels? Why are they mentioned? Lodia chasodav shel makom. To teach us kindness of Hashem. She'afabi shegazar aleim nataltalav alaniyam bamidbar. Even though, as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim, there was a decree that they should be moving around, it sounds like they wouldn't have a moment's peace. Well, how many times do they have to encamp and travel? One can only imagine, hundreds maybe. No. Lo tomar shayu no'im mutotalim mimasa lamasa kolaborim shana. Don't think they were constantly on the move, velo haisalem menucha, with no peace. Not so. Because look, Shari Ein Kan Ella Arboy Mushtaim Masos. There's only 42 places here. And moreover, Tsei Mehem Yudalit, deduct 14 from these 42. Shekulam Hayu Bashana Rishona Kodam Gezeira. They were all in the first year, even before they did anything wrong. So 42 minus 14 leaves you 28 over a period of almost 40 years. Not bad. Some people think that they're living in one place and move that often. So these are Rashi's comments, and we've discussed them at length on the previous occasions. But what's very interesting is to ask a simple question, a Lashon HaKodesh question. What does the word Maso mean? Eile Mas'ei B'nei Yisrael. What is the translation of the word Maso? Masa. Well, perhaps we would translate journey from the word Nosea. The reason why it's such an important question is because there are two possibilities. Either the word masa means journey, and journey is an action, an act, or the word masa is a place from and to which one journeys. Now, of course, they're closely connected. One journeys from one place to the other. But nonetheless, it's an important question. It's a basic question. What does the word masa mean? Actually, it will lead us to another shaila. How many masaos were there? Well, if you ever travel from A to B, so that's one journey between two places. And if you travel from B to C, that's two journeys from three places. The amount of journeys will always be N minus one vis-a-vis the places. How many places are mentioned in the beginning of Masei? 42. And Rashi says, calls them Arboim Ushtaim Masaos. 42 Masaos. Rashi now is thereby telling us that he translates the word Masa not as a journey, because if there were 42 places, there were 41 journeys. But for Rashi, Masaos are the places from and to which they journeyed. Okay. Now, with regards to these Masaos, something that isn't really spoken about in this week's Parsha, it's important to realize not only did the Jewish people not go in a straight line, at a certain point they retraced their steps. They backtracked a number of stations. And how does that come out? Because if we take a look at Pasuk Lamed Aleph of Perek Lamed Gimel, Lamed Aleph says, Vayis'u mimoseiros vayachanu bivnei Ya'akan. Okay, two of the stations, they moved from Moseiros to Bnei Ya'akan. And then they proceeded. After a number of psukim, they get to a place called Hor Hahar in Pasuk Lamed Zayin. After another half a dozen or so, Vayisumi Kadesh Vayachanu B'Hor Hahar, and that's where Aaron passed away. So Pasuk says Vayal Aaron Akor El Hor Hahar Al Pi Hashem Vayomas Shom. Yeah. Now, in a few weeks' time, Parshas Ekev, we will read the following pasuk. It's in Devarim, Perek Yud, Pasuk Vav. And let's hear carefully. Uvnei Yisrael nas'u mibe'eros b'nei Ya'akan Mosera. They traveled from b'nei Ya'akan to Mosera. Sham meis Aaron v'yikaver sham. That's where Aaron died. And Rashi voices a couple of questions we should instantly have. Number one, the direction of travel has been reversed. We were told in this week's Parsha they moved from Moseiros to Bnei Ya'akan. Here the Pasuk says they moved from Bnei Ya'akan to Moseiros. That's number one. And then it says Shammeis Aaron. That's where Aaron died. But we were told that he died in Hor Hahar, which is a half a dozen places, stations down the road, or whatever. And Rashi says, and I don't know if this is well known, They've traveled from Bnei Yakan to Moseira. It's the exact opposite. He quotes our pasuk in Parshas Maaseh. Moreover, says Rashi, Shomeis Aaron, Falobahoharmes. Says Rashi, Tseva Chashov, make a cheshbon, you will see Vatinta Shmona Masoos Mimoseros Lahar Hahar. You will find 8 stations from Moseros, where they were earlier, till Har Hahar. And what happened? Rashi will just mention it Baal Peh. Rashi from the Medrash, that when Aaron died, so the Bnei Yisrael became vulnerable because they temporarily lost the Anani HaKavod, which were their protection. And therefore there was a war, which is described in Pasuk in Parshas Chukas. And they became scared, and they backtracked. They moved a number of stations back until it was Bnei Levi who came back and took up arms against them and forced them to return. It's very interesting. Levi are never involved, in principle, in war. But we do see that they do what needs to be done when no one else is doing it, even amongst the Bnei Yisrael, with the Chet Ha'egel, Vayasvulav Bnei Levi, and so too here. And that's why, says Rashi, of course, originally they moved from Mosera to Bnei Yakan. But in Parshas Ekev it says, but they moved back. Aaron died in Hor HaHar, but as a result of his death, they backtracked all the way to Moseh, which is 8 Masos, says Rashi, and they had to go back again and to retrace their steps. Now, the question is, although we should know, just to mention, there's another voice in Chazal, in the Mechilta in Parshas Beshalach, which also concurs that they moved back from Bnei Yakan to, from Hor HaHar all the way back to Moseros, but the Mechilta seems to understand that was done with sanction, with divine sanction, and it was for covered, out of covered for Aaron, and it was okay. So it's very interesting. You can see from the Psukim that they moved backwards. The question is, are you Dorish Lignai or Lishvach? Was it bad that they moved back, or was it good? And that seems to be something of a machlokas. And the Shaila that we may ask is, does it make a difference? Does it make a practical difference? Is there any nafkimina? Unlikely that there would be. After all, it's Maaseh, they move backwards, they move forwards. Why do they move backwards? How many times do they move backwards? But interestingly enough, it does make a difference. Every shul will be impacted by this discussion. How so? There's many halachas with regards to how a Sefer Torah should be written. The script, the ink, the parchment, everything. Here's a shaila. Does the halacha have anything to say about how many lines there should be per column? We take it for granted. There's got to be a certain number, and naturally the amount will be what it is. No, there is insistence. In fact, the Tur quotes 2 customs about this. The first is the Maharam of Rotenburg, who says there should be 48 rows, 48 lines on every column of Sefer Torah. Okay? And we've never counted them before. But Rabbi Yehuda in Barcelona, says the Tur, says there should be 42 lines. Why 42? Keminyan Maaseh Bnei Yisrael, corresponding to the journeys of Bnei Yisrael. That's very interesting. So Rabbi Yehuda in Barcelona, all of a sudden, Parshas Maaseh finds its way into every column of the Sefer Torah. 42 journeys, 42 stations, 42 lines. What about the Maharam, 48? Well, says the Prisha, yes. Because, don't forget, they moved back a few. Isn't that right? In Parshas Ekev, that's also part of their journeys, and therefore that gives a total of 48. However, says the Shiras David, don't forget, we have to pay attention to detail here. Whether you tally the number of Masa'os as 42 or 48 also depends on how you translate the word Masa. Is it a journey or is it a place? Rashi's told us that there are places, there were 42 places. And that's the opinion of the Rabbi Yehuda Barcelona. However, the Maharam says 48 because he understands that the Masa'os here are the journeys, not the places. So So there's 41 initial journeys, and what Rashi called 8 masos, because he translates masos places, is another 7 journeys. 41 plus 7 is 48. So a machlokas in parshanut, how to translate the word masos, will find its way onto every page of a Sefer Torah. And moreover, should we ask the Shiras David, what is their machlokas? Should it be 42 or 48? Perhaps their machlokas is the very dispute amongst the opinions in Chazal as to whether it's good for the Jews that they made those extra trips back from Hor HaHar. It was done out of respect for Aaron with divine sanction, or it was bad for the Jews. If it was bad for the Jews and they had to be forced back and they retraced their steps out of fear, that's not something that we'd like to enshrine in a Sefer Torah, and therefore we keep the optimum number of masos as 42. That's Rabbi Yehuda Barcelona. However, the Maharam says, no, 48, he seemingly has the benign, favorable approach to those seven extra journeys, and they find their way onto the page of a Sefer Torah. So from the Parshanut of Maaseh to the discussions in Chazal about their journeys, to Halacha Lemaisa in Sefer Torah, once again, we see the Achdus of Torah, and with that we conclude Chumash Bamidbar, Chazak, Chazak, Ben Yitzchak.